The Tom Woods Show, episode 2277.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey folks, chances are if you're listening to this podcast, you are surrounded by irrational, panicked people who think you're a terrible person because you don't want to lock everybody in their houses. No amount of reasoning appears to accomplish anything. And not to mention the media has done nothing but stoke fear and failed to provide context. Well, one of the many benefits you get as a supporter of The Tom Woods Show is membership inside The Tom Woods Show Elite. Recently migrated off Facebook, so if that was holding you back, no longer. This group will keep you sane and informed, and as an added bonus, it won't accuse you of wanting to kill your grandmother. Join me in there at supportinglisteners.com. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Our old friend Tho Bishop is back with us. He is communications director at the Mises Institute, and he keeps a pretty watchful eye, especially on Republican politics and on Ron DeSantis, and for that matter, Donald Trump. And the two of them are sort of feuding, but it's a very one-sided kind of feud where the other side either ignores the first side or doesn't refer to that side by name. It's just a weird situation. So I just wanted to sort out what in heaven's name is going on, and I thought I would ask Tho to join us. So thank you very much, Tho.
Thank you for having me, Tom.
All right, let's dig into this here. First of all, let's just put cards on the table here. Are you a DeSantis man?
Well, I am. It's been a very weird experience last few years as a longtime Rothbardian to actually have a level of respect for an elected official. I like DeSantis. I have perhaps a naive, delusional sense of optimism about what he could even accomplish at the national level. But I'm someone who my preference up to really the midterms last year would have been, hey, look, throw Trump back up in D.C. for another 4 years. Let DeSantis spend as much time as he can showing what a anti-D.C. governor can do and then do that in the future. And in an ideal world, I think that's where I would like. Not that Trump is my favorite in the world by any means, but I like the chaos up there. So it's very interesting to see as someone who has some sympathy to DeSantis not running, watching Trump try to navigate this environment from a position of weakness, perhaps for the first time since he's really entered Republican politics, and then watching DeSantis' response to kind of increasing attacks coming his way.
Yeah, I've heard people say if he doesn't hit back, he's going to be in trouble. But I think he's handled it exactly right. And I think it makes Trump look bad that he keeps attacking and DeSantis won't take the bait. The other day, the press did ask DeSantis about this. I'm sure you saw this clip. And he just came back with an answer. Well, the Florida voters seem to have indicated how they feel. And that more or less seemed to settle the question. Because the odd thing is, Trump is criticizing him by saying there's been a lot of revisionist history about Florida, that actually Florida was locked down for a while and this and that. But for Trump, of all people, to say that when he stood by idly as Fauci continued to demand lockdowns. And as you know, he criticized Governor Kemp in Georgia for reopening too early. And he criticized Sweden for not locking down. So then now he's going to criticize DeSantis for locking down too long. I mean, you could criticize DeSantis for that. Some people could, not Trump.
Right. And it's interesting within that comment, he actually talks about how the voters got to decide this. I won re-election and then went to talk about responsibilities of being a executive. And I think there was his own sort of jab at Trump without saying it by name in a very sort of disciplined sort of way there. But yeah, that's one of the interesting things coming from Trump is that he's someone who kind of mastered the art of like bully ball politics with these catchy nicknames, Lion Ted and the like. He had a good sort of instinct on the weak spot, kind of like the popular girl that zeroes in right on what your insecurity is going to be back in high school. And yet Trump so far is trying to, for one, he's undermining what is the best argument for Trump 2024, which is, well, hey, instead of having DeSantis leave Florida as governor, you could have the best of both worlds. He could take credit for DeSantis. Hey, if you like DeSantis, well, I'm the guy that made DeSantis, and so let's work together. Instead, he's trying to hammer him on areas where not even your average Trump supporter thinks Trump is better on. Every week, I'm active with my local Republican Party. That's one of my vices out there. I talk to the sort of people that wake up and watch Steve Bannon several times a week. They own multiple Trump t-shirts. If Trump came to Panama City tomorrow, they would be camping out 3 hours in advance. I mean, these are the core of Trump people. They're not on Twitter. They're not very online. They liked his campaign the first time. They love the 2016 message. They like what he did as president. And they're not buying these attacks, right? So his sort of core demographic is not buying what he's trying to sell right now. And what's interesting is that DeSantis, he's got some weaknesses as a politician and as a campaigner and things like that. But what he's best at is leveraging the decisions he makes as governor for like optimizing, maximizing their political impact. And so I do not think it's a coincidence that after his reelection, for 3 months, his sort of core issues have been doubling down on his role as anti-COVID governor. And that includes going after vaccine manufacturers and big pharma for lies they told about the effectiveness of the vaccine, convening a grand jury in Florida, trying to see what they can do to hold these companies liable, doubling down on the protections, making them permanent, doubling down on medical free speech for doctors. Like my buddy John Ward, he from Panama City, that was on your show last week. They tried to get it through the legislature last year. It didn't work for a variety of interesting reasons. He's doubling down on that this session. And so I think that he's intentionally opening up 2023 with a very COVID-heavy policy portfolio. Not that he doesn't care about anyway, but he also knows that politically, this is the number one issue that he can hammer Trump on through actions rather than words. And Trump is left simply complaining about it and trying to rewrite history on Truth Social in a way that, again, a lot of the hardcore Trump right just, I mean, isn't going to buy.
Speaking of hardcore Trump, do you know this guy, Bill Mitchell?
Not personally, but he was a Twitter regular.
Yes.
Peak 2016. He was as loyal as anyone on the Trump campaign.
He was ridiculously loyal. Like, he really would say 2 + 2 = 5 if Trump told him. I have never seen anything quite like it on any side of anything, this guy, Bill Mitchell. But the other day, I saw him first starting to complain that Trump should not be attacking DeSantis. This is dumb. This should not be happening. And then later I saw him say, all right, that's it. I'm out. I cannot be part of this anymore. And instead, I'm going to be joining the DeSantis team, or at least I'm going to be doing everything I can to get him in. So now if DeSantis says 2 + 2 = 5, Bill will be right on board. But I don't know if Bill Mitchell matters much. He's got probably 500,000 Twitter followers. But if a guy like that, who was willing to say white is black if Trump told him to, says this is too much for me, then I wonder what it is doing for the average voter.
Yeah. Again, I tell you from experience that, again, I've got people that they still had Trump 2020 signs hanging up, whether it was their garage or in some cases kind of flags in the front of their house where politics is kind of treated like a college football team. They took down these things after the first punches that Trump threw at DeSantis right before the midterm, the de-sanctimonious sort of nickname out there. And the problem that Trump has is that unlike a lot of his other attacks in the past against Cruz or, I mean, particularly Jeb Bush, those folks where kind of his punches at these people made people that weren't really buying what Trump was selling like him more, because their enemies were his enemies. And with the DeSantis dynamic, the ideal ticket for the majority of Trump 2024 voter in February 2023 is a Trump-DeSantis ticket. They see DeSantis as a younger, more disciplined Trump. They still think Trump needs to be that head guy because he got screwed in 2020. He's got his enemies list that they want to take down. He can help purge the swamp and the DeSantis can build back up afterwards. That is the argument that a lot of, you know, they hate the division. They don't want DeSantis run precisely because they don't want to split the party and help the bad guys in their view, right? And so you can't be punching your people's favorite number two and not have that rub people the wrong way. And during the 2016 campaign, people, it's easy to forget over time, the one time where Trump got pushback for going negative against one of his competitors, his rivals, was nice guy Ben Carson. Because Ben Carson, he appealed to a lot of the same people that Trump did. He was not a politician. He was accomplished, kind of had celebrity type status, not quite NBC reality show host status, but you know, very popular in his own right. He had his own sort of message that really resonated with people. And there was a time there for about 2 weeks where Ben Carson was tied or even better than Trump in some of these national polls. And then Trump kind of made, you know, I think at one point, like he implied that Ben Carson was crazy, you know, in the way that Trump does. And that got some negative feedback. And the problem that Trump finds himself in right now is that he's kind of isolated Mar-a-Lago. He hasn't done a rally since before the midterms. He's surrounded by sycophants that cater, that control what media he's consuming. He's not on Twitter. This is a guy whose best skill was always as sort of an instinctual communicator, knowing what the audience wanted. No consistency of change with the audience, but he kind of knew what his people wanted. If he doesn't have that reflex, if he doesn't have that feedback mechanism, then he makes decisions that hurt him and alienate those very people. I think that's what you're kind of seeing right now is that, again, the more that he tries to double down on this sort of anger, I think he feels resentful that DeSantis is being disloyal because DeSantis would not be governor of the state of Florida. He would not be the wonder kid right now if it wasn't for Donald Trump. And therefore, he owes some sort of life debt to Donald Trump. And for Trump's credit, there would be no Governor DeSantis without Trump. That aspect of the story is correct. He made him governor through his endorsements. The problem is that there's a lot of people that can remember Trump's culpability with the COVID lockdowns. They remember his cozying up to Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan when he had the opportunity to change house in 2016. They remember, you know, people of Trump's orbit doubling down on Romney McDaniels in the RNC chair race just last week. There are a lot of people that believed in that 2016 message. They're not going to just kind of cozy up to this pure cult of personality that Trump wants in himself. And the interesting thing of this is that it demonstrates, once again, as is the case with many, many things, Lou Rockwell was right, where he would talk about just as the Jeffersonians were better than Jefferson and the Jacksonians were better than Jackson, the Trumpers are better than Trump. And their skepticisms over the vaccine, no matter how much Trump tried to promote it, the skepticism and hatred they had for Fauci, even as Trump wanted his popularity and put him on press conferences with him, these attacks for DeSantis are not being bought by a lot of Trumpers because their larger instincts, their skepticism of DC, their frustration with the corrupt politics of old, their skepticism of all these institutions that have screwed over so much of America, that matters more to them than even Donald Trump himself. And that it's been very encouraging to see this play out, again, in some of the circles that I swim that, again, are very MAGA-friendly, to put it lightly.
Right. I also read an article recently about Trump's fundraising that was saying that the fundraising is a bit lackluster, that oddly enough, he raised less in the 6 weeks following his announcement than he had in the 6 weeks prior to the announcement. Now, I don't know if this is significant in 2022 with the election so far off. I don't know if alarm bells are going off or if this is premature, but there is that issue. Whereas by contrast, I mean, DeSantis hasn't declared anything. He keeps saying that he's just going to be governor. But the issue with DeSantis 24 or 28 really is you have to run when you're hot. That's what some people have been saying. Now, Robert Barnes says it would be political suicide for DeSantis to run in 24. But I've heard a lot of other people say, if he waits till 28 and you think he'll still be the hotshot he is now, a lot can happen in the news cycle that kind of just drowns him out. He's got to do it right now. So we've got a DeSantis who's hot and a Trump who, at least according to this article about fundraising, maybe is not generating the kind of excitement as before. What do you make of that?
No, you're right. And again, anyone questions the hot narrative right there. I mean, sure, you had Chris Christie back in 2012. You know, you had so many people desperately begging Chris Christie to run because they didn't like Romney. We had Rick Perry disappointed when he jumped in late. These were the same people that, you know, obviously weren't ready for Ron Paul yet, to their great, great discredit. And then Christie became a nothing. He was on the junior varsity stage during most of his attempt in 2016. The fundraising aspect is interesting because there's two components to this. One is the big dollar donors, the traditional political class, and those have definitely been shifting to DeSantis, if not into worse areas. Like, I mean, Nikki Haley might announce here. And there's a few that I think you're going to end up seeing a decent amount of, let's call it Chamber of Commerce money, not back DeSantis because of some of his more rough policies against Disney, against private vaccine mandates, against corporate power generally. I think largely to DeSantis' credit on that. But a lot of the people that were kind of gung-ho for Trump in 2020 became on board in 2016, often in spite of original skepticism. They are lining up behind DeSantis. Ken Griffin, who's, I believe, was Citadel, a big typical Wall Street oligarch type figure. Trump is kind of using that and blasting. So, oh, the globalist Ken Griffin. Of course, you know, it's the wonderful thing about Trump is that you can find where, like, he was lavishing praise on Ken Griffin when his checks were going Trump's way around the DeSantis play. Again, hypocrisy is the art of politics, but that's worth noting. So the big billionaire class, the oligarch class, the political donor class is lining up increasingly behind DeSantis rather than Trump. The other side of it, though, is the small dollar limit. And that's, again, another area where the worst qualities of the Trump campaign really shine, because they were outright taking advantage of elderly people that were motivated by just the best of interest by Trump. That campaign, his experience just kind of plucked a certain sort of patriotic tune that really thought that they were making America better by supporting Trump. And these are people that, you know, are not millionaires, right? And they kept blasting them with emails and text messaging numbers. And, oh, you haven't given your $100 this month. Have you forgotten Trump? Are we going to have to tell Trump that you're betraying him? And this is the same sort of apparatus that the RNC ran. You know, being in Florida Republican, I kept getting some of the most embarrassing beta male text messages from Marco Rubio during his campaign last time. He seemed to be neurotic, his entire fundraising. I don't know who told him that's an appealing trick there. But Trump and kind of the RNC broadly have kind of run this small donor machine into the ground, where, again, obviously that is not even producing the same sort of juice that fruit was bearing back in 2020. Again, I think some of that reflects some of the movement towards DeSantis from rank and file people. But to the Barnes point, because, I mean, this was something that a lot of people say, but, you know, if you're running into Trump, you're going up against Mike Tyson. DeSantis has never had to take a punch the way that Trump is going to punch him. Again, for one, it looks like the political Mike Tyson's a little flabby, a little out of shape. Secondly, though, is that, you know, the early primary states actually stack up very well for DeSantis. You have Iowa, which Trump lost in 2016. That was Ted Cruz country. And I think you'll probably see a lot of the Ted Cruz people that like Trump's policies, but never quite his demeanor. I'm sure Ted Cruz has never really forgotten the way that Trump went after his wife, for example. I think you'll see that being a very friendly DeSantis
area. I actually forgot how he went after his wife. I only remember Lion Ted.
Yeah.
I mean, sorry, Lil Marco.
Well, yeah, Lil Marco was fun too. I mean, there was so many greatest hits. You know, politics has become such a circus. I mean, even more than it was before, ever since. It's easy to forget. But, you know, New Hampshire, I think, is to be friendly to DeSantis territory, South Carolina. So these are states that line up very well. And so I think there's also something to be said where if DeSantis is going to be a figure that can actually be a meaningful president, and let's throw that out there as a possibility. I know most of your audience will probably be cynical to that very idea, understandably so. History would indicate that this is a foolish idea to entertain. But for the sake of it, if DeSantis is going to end up being effective, I think there's something to be said, one, about him having to be able to bring together that sort of professional political donor class in that grassroots, almost sort of a, you know, the way that you united Rome by bringing together the Optimaries and the Popularies. I think that is kind of what we're seeing with DeSantis. Someone who can go against donor interest when they are wrong, which DeSantis has kind of done within Florida, going up against Disney, going up against, again, a lot of Florida companies that had their own private vaccine mandates before they banned them. But also, I think there's something to be said about having to take down the king. And if DeSantis is able to do that, that kind of elevates him in a way that most political candidates, you know, that's a big scalp. And that gives him the ability to really shape a party apparatus that is, again, extremely corrupt, extremely captured. Again, 2016, Republican voters voted to get rid of the McConnells, the Romneys, the Paul Ryans of the world. Trump made sure that they kept them in this place and said very nice things about them until they went against them for the last time. There is a pathway here where DeSantis could be I think, a uniquely interesting political figure if he can overcome everything that Trump is going to throw about him. And if he can't, then he won't be. It's kind of one of those things where this is a moment in time. If DeSantis can't take down Trump, then the chances of him taking down the deep state, him taking down all these other bad actors that we have domestically, is unlikely, right? So this is an important challenge for him. And so it's going to be interesting to see exactly what the next couple of years bring. I would expect him to announce shortly after the legislative session going on in Tallahassee right now. And that's where, once those fundraising dollars and those numbers come in, that will really kind of show just how many troops are arranged out there on the field ready to follow a new general.
Now, let's be frank about this. Obviously, DeSantis is not a libertarian. Everybody knows that. But on the other hand, he's not consumed 24 hours a day with a hate-filled desire to destroy my family and me. So he has at least that going for him. He's got that. So I think we kind of know what his strengths are, and his strengths are not inconsiderable. But what do you think, from a libertarian perspective, would be his weaknesses? I always hear him bragging about some new spending program or whatever. And I understand, as a politician, how smart that might be. But if we just go back into the realm of theory for but a moment, where do you think his major flaws are?
The biggest concern out there is foreign policy. And that's a big, big concern.
And I guess we're going to find that out in a matter of months. If he decides to run, right, he's going to have to start talking about Russia and Ukraine, and rather than avoiding it. And by the way, I thought the fact that he's avoided it was almost a kind of good sign, because everybody in the world feels compelled to make some boilerplate statement.
Right. I mean, I remember CPAC last year, the first day of CPAC was the day after the initial invasion. And DeSantis said nothing. The easiest time in the entire world, throw in some throwaway lines about our hearts are with the Ukrainian people and Putin bad. You know, Tulsi Gabbard, she spoke that very same evening. She's certainly no hawk in this issue. And, she did a tip of the hat to the Ukrainian people. DeSantis said nothing, which is very interesting. And it has largely stayed out of it, not even kind of falling into the default, Biden's weakness sort of line. On the foreign policy side, though, there are two very strong positions. I know you have Scott Horton and a lot of libertarian foreign policy analysts that portray DeSantis as almost a Bush-era neocon. I think that is overstating it. He's someone who ran opposing Syrian intervention. He's someone who I think his foreign policy is fairly similar to Tulsi, where they support military aggression against al-Qaeda and non-state actors more than I'd particularly like the consequences therein, but are a little bit more skeptical to, so-called regime change wars. The issue, though, is that there are blind spots and a few specific examples within DeSantis' background, those being Iran, which calls into larger concerns about DeSantis' close ties with Israel, which has infected even some of his policy as governor. They had a very infamous signing of legislation over in Israel, which I get rubs people the wrong way, fine. The other side is Cuba, where he's been a little bit more aggressive there and kind of has, obviously, South American politics, south of Florida, similar to the way that Israel affects politics in south of Florida. Those are some things there that I think honest people can have very, very deep concerns about in terms of foreign policy approach. Our friend Dan McCarthy, though, who has been in rooms where DeSantis has given off the record, non-recorded conversations about his foreign policy views. For the Compact magazine last year, he wrote about DeSantis as a foreign policy realist and is a little bit more optimistic about the way that DeSantis can not necessarily create an isolationist, in a good way, a non-interventionist American foreign policy, but can reset foreign policy priorities in ways that would be a net positive. And so my hope casting, my wish casting here, which again is problematic, I'm willing to put my biases there on the table, is that I think that there is a lot of overlap between skepticisms and understanding that not only are federal policymakers fallible and make things wrong, but the inherent corruption of the so-called expert class within DC and the way that it makes decisions and have devastating consequences for America. And I know this talking from people around Tallahassee and within that orbit, a lot of DeSantis's decisions about COVID did not come from him having the right person around him, though finding those right people is a skill in itself. It's something that Trump never was particularly great at, but they came from his willingness to make those decisions himself by reading broadly. And so if he has the ability to take the same lens that he took as an executive to the issue of COVID and can approach that to foreign policy, and if we can get a situation where there's nothing more than a reset away from this America world police, we have to be Europe's enforcer of bad actors, and instead recognize the national self-interest of other actors and the economic consequences that have come from us playing this policing role and the fragility that we have created into global supply chains that have very real consequences to average Americans, to speak nothing of more vulnerable populations of this world. If he can make that ideological transition, again, he will not be a foreign policy libertarian. I have no doubt the DeSantis administration will continue to be good business for antiwar.com, but I think that would be a notable, a plaudible step in the right direction. And that is, I think, within the realms of possibility. And I think that the broader intellectual environment that is happening on the right, perhaps best illustrated by Heritage under the leadership of the new president, Kevin Roberts, and Heritage has employed some Mises people. They've had some conversations with some Mises people, which again, is a step in the right direction.
Oh, they invited Jeff Deist on their podcast.
Exactly. So these are steps in the right direction.
And I've been very, very critical of the Heritage Foundation in the past. So I'm not just, I don't have a knee-jerk support for them by any means.
There might be some episodes of Mises Weekends back in the day where Jeff had some choice remarks his own right.
Yeah.
But they're now calling for restraint foreign policy. They're calling for Pentagon slicing spending as a way of dealing with budget cuts, which had been unthinkable prior to Kevin Roberts, right? So the intellectual class of the right that will eventually make up and fill out whatever Team Blue has changed with Team Red, all those positions are filtered through with these various institutions and et cetera. The quality of foreign policy staffer, I think, will be better so long as you don't have a Nikki Haley, have a complete Bush-era Republican in there. And that is where the personnel aspect of the larger, call it right, this revival of paleoconservatism that has taken over certain actors there. I think that has the ability for a DeSantis that might be, DeSantis has the same level of skepticism that, let's say, Trump had. You know, Trump had to keep staffing full of Bush-era alums, or he didn't have to, but like that was where the resumes were coming in. I think you're going to have better people that have the positions to infiltrate some of these positions. And so that's why if we can get a DeSantis administration that changes the ideology and ends up hiring a handful of Republican policy staffers in sort of mid-level positions who know who Scott Horton is and respects antiwar.com, that is going to be a step in the right direction. And that, I think, is within the realm of possibility, given what I have seen the way that DeSantis handle the executive power that he's had in Florida.
All right, folks, if you haven't before, and I find that hard to believe, check out the Mises Institute at Mises.org, Mises.org, and follow Tho on Twitter at Tho Bishop. That's T-H-O Bishop. And Tho, is there anything else you want me to promote, by the way, as long as I have you?
Actually, we've got some great video series that I think your audience would like. If you go to Mises.org/begin, we've got a great nine-part foreign policy series. They're about 3-4 minute long videos, animated, kind of a great Rothbardian revisionist look at American foreign policy. We have a modern update to what has government done to our money. We've also have an economics for beginners series. And so that is Mises.org/begin. I think your audience would love it.
Excellent. I will link to that at TomWoods.com/2277. Thank you, Tho.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, before we wrap up for the weekend, a pretty important announcement here from Ole Woods. The Tom Woods School of Life has reopened its doors, but just for a few days, just through February 7th, 2023. Then we close them up again. That's why you got to be on my mailing list. Then you get notified about things like this. But we've been having tremendous success inside this thing. This is the community for people who are determined to live flourishing and prosperous lives, even in a hostile world. And what we've been doing that's had the most success is we meet in groups of 10 to 15 people every week, and we set finite, achievable goals for ourselves every week. So if we're working toward opening or building up a business or losing weight or publishing a book, all of which are being done on a regular basis inside this group successfully, you get great feedback from other people in the groups. Our facilitators are professional business folks, so they give you great feedback. And the thing is, when you're isolated, when you're trying to do everything on your own, again, whether it's losing weight or opening a business or whatever it is that your goal is, you get discouraged, you hit a snag, sometimes you just give up. But the group keeps you going. And that's why we've had so much success inside the Tom Woods School of Life in the small groups. And that's why people just refuse to leave. They're just going to stay in these groups because they keep having successes week after week. And that's not to mention every month, the entire community gets masterclasses on crucial topics, not about the non-aggression principle. We know all about that, but practical topics like investing, homeschooling, negotiation. In other words, how to get what you want. Starting a business, online or offline, real estate, relocation, even when you're on a budget, and plenty more. I've given presentations on how to be a better writer, how to deliver an effective speech. We've had presentations on how to fight that inner critic that tries to undermine everything you do, how to defeat self-sabotage, which is a problem that a lot of people face. All this stuff is in there and more. So check it out. The website is tomschooloflife.com. See you next week.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.